Today's episode of Market Talk is brought to you in part by GrowMark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least. But there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next. And good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk for this Monday, June 7th. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you here with us as always. MarketTalkAg.com, that is our home on the web. The all-new MarketTalkAg.com. You can find great resources there, including all of our streaming platforms, our YouTube channel, ag news, market information, weather, much more. It's all online at MarketTalkAg.com. Got a lot to talk about here as we start off a new week and look at our market trade. Let's bring in our good friend Brian Doherty with Total Farm Marketing. And Brian, good afternoon to you. How's things up in Wisconsin today, Brian?
Things are interesting. I'm going to say generally dry. We weren't looking for any rain today, but there's a few scattered showers, so we'll take what we can. But just took a minute, looked outside. Doesn't look like there's a whole lot more than to wet the pavement. And we're just in one of those patterns where we're struggling, just like a lot of people in the upper Midwest, just can't get a good string of showers, or at least one good, strong, heavy shower. Just can't get it right now.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about the dryness concerns, and you mentioned, you know, where you're at in Wisconsin, dry up there, and you shift that conversation the farther west you go, it's drier and drier and drier, and that's really kind of been the storyline here the last few days in this market trade, Brian. And you know, as we look at it today, we came off weather models, so Sunday night overnight, impressive gains, and then kind of gave some of that back here today. And I heard a lot of talk of some farmers selling off that Sunday night rally. Is that kind of what you heard here as we went through the day today? Because we were kind of split between old and new crop today.
Sure, you hear some of that for sure. And farmers last time saw how quickly the market disappeared. Let's call it disappeared. That all of a sudden we had a string of days up, and then it turned over, and all of a sudden, before you know it, beans are down $1, corn's down $1. And you look back and go, wow, I wish I would have had some orders in there. So I think, as what most people do, they kind of learn from the immediate pain. The immediate pain was, hey, I could have had some better prices. So you put your orders above, and those are triggered. I think a little more to the story there, maybe the idea that the fund money, the managed money, is a lot of it in the markets, at some point needs to roll out of these July contracts. And so as July doesn't hold its strength, the funds, I think, run their stop up underneath pretty quick. And the next thing you know, you're seeing July come under some heavy pressure. At least that's the story I'm going to stick with today. We've got so much volatility. Typically, you don't give up inverted markets unless you see something change. I'm not really seeing anything change in the weather, though. That's the big thing, is you've got a portion of the crop ahead that could be, it's June 7th. Let's look at it. I mean, it could be in peril. There's some crop that just needs moisture soon.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And to your point about the fund money maybe rolling out, I think we kind of saw that situation with the May contracts, is some of those funds waited a little too long almost to roll out of some of those contracts and some of that managed money position. So maybe they're learning from their mistakes. Maybe they're getting out a little bit sooner as well. That could be something at play here, Brian.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of, and anytime you get these inverted markets, it's for good reason, either tight supply, strong demand, or combination of both, or something where the market really puts the emphasis on that. And when I say emphasis, it's almost like emotion. The emotion on the front months, and emotion could get very erratic. So we saw some real erratic markets today in beans and corn. As an example, July beans closed at 1560 and a quarter with a high of 1623. So that's a lot off the high. That's what, 23 cents off the high. That's a lot. November beans, 40 cents off the high. Geez, there's some years where we're lucky if we get 60 cents or 40 cents on a rally for most of the year.
Yeah, that's a great point you make. And, you know, you mentioned not seeing much change in the weather forecasts. I'm not seeing much either. I mean, about the only change I may be seeing is that we're talking a chance of some showers working their way into the Dakotas, but they're going to be fairly scattered in nature. They're talking the Canadian prairies getting some moisture, but really not a lot of change in this weather forecast. So to me, it was just kind of a curious day. You kind of alluded to it, watching the markets move the way they did with nothing really changing in the weather.
Right. And unless somebody seems to know something that we don't, but to your point, there was probably a pickup in farmers selling. And as you get on these old crop contracts, as you get further down the road, those are in them realize too, that the volatility can pick up and likely were running their stops up underneath too. And as the market tripped down, they went, their sellers, not sellers because all of a sudden negative, they're just sellers because the market tripped their order. And when you have a number of those, you can see how it can add up. I think the big story for the week, there'll be forecasts. We got a USDA report out on Thursday. That'll say some things. It'll probably downgrade the Brazilian corn crop. They continue to struggle with dry weather. Most estimates are less than the USDA 102 million metric tons out of Brazil, some down to around 90. So that'll be the kind of the big report this week. And of course, each forecast is big right now.
What am I looking at here this week? If I'm kind of, you know, looking at my marketing plan, I got that long-term plan in place, hopefully, or that medium range plan in place, but maybe, you know, I'm looking at a week like this where we're trading volatile weather markets, different forecasts. We have that USDA report coming up. Anything, if I'm a farmer, I should look at with my marketing plan here this week on the grain side, Brian?
Yeah. You know, first let's start with a day like today. Today we had some big overnight trade, and again, never hurts to put your orders above the market, kind of your wish list orders. They might have got triggered last night. All of a sudden, you look at, you know, this big change in beans. If you have to put something, let's say at $16 last night or $16.20, all of a sudden $15.60, that's a lot of volatility. So one, keep in mind your price orders. Those are orders that you set a price and hope that the market can get to them and hit. Two is time of year. We're at the seventh here. So I'll write this in my weekly or my report tonight on corn. In fact, I already wrote it. And that is the good news is it's June 7th. The bad news is it's June 7th. it's a really precarious time. So from a calendar perspective, though, historically, you've got to watch this really closely. So what does that mean? Well, if you're kind of as far along as you want to be on sales, but the price is driving you nuts, well, then budget for some puts and buy some puts. They're going to cost more than usual. We're at a time of year where this week, next week, the week after, if the forecast change, if the actual weather changes, all of a sudden things go down. Everybody looks back and it's always just a, you know, short-term scare. And it drove the roots down deeper and now we got big crop and all of this kind of business. So keep in mind time of year and what kind of tool might be best suited to shift the risk for you. If you remember, when you're a producer, you're an owner. So you want to shift the risk of that ownership with either fixed risk or just lock it in. If you lock it in, that's through a forward sale, hedge to arrive, and then look at a retained ownership position on that. Look at something like a call option or a bull call spread. So lots of strategy that a farmer should be thinking about, especially when you're winding down field work here. Take some time and look at it.
Some great advice there for sure. Let's move. Let's talk livestock a little bit here. And hog market was fairly decent today. You know, we keep our eye on this hog market that just has solid demand. I know exports last week were low, but overall demand in this hog market continuing to look good. And that seems to be the one shining star of the livestock sector right now, Brian.
It definitely is the shining star for sure. It's funny how you have cattle kind of struggling, going in one direction and packer capacity, and then you got hogs going the other direction, and it makes you kind of wonder at what point, you know, do you see this whole thing really flip and maybe even flip kind of hard. It's pretty unusual to see the price of hogs higher than the price of cattle. And so those things typically, when I say it's unusual, that should ring a bell. Well, that's not very often, right? So it's not very often. It's kind of unique. Well, you're kind of unique. doesn't usually last. So these things usually don't last long. Wouldn't be surprised to see that flip over. I'm not trying to outguess this, but the hog market's had a long run. It's had a good run. It's been just, you know, very steady uptrend here. But at some point, it starts to price itself out of the market. And my guess would be as packers gradually get caught up on the beef sector and there's more beef available, that hogs are just going to take a natural turn to the lower. And on top of that, we've been in a strong uptrend for quite some time. And not that I'm trying to outguess this, but I got to think that somebody out there is trying to keep sow herd or at least gilts back. And I know people say, well, they get mixed into the herd and actually your sow herd's lower. And I'm not so sure about that. I think where there's money, anytime you start making money, and I'm sure the hog producers are making money despite high corn, supply has a way of figuring out how to grow itself.
Very, very true. And on the flip side, you mentioned packer capacity, supply on the beef side. You know, that's we're looking at a lot of issues there right now. But you know, I was pleasantly surprised on the board today. Our close, we did have a fairly solid close there at the end. I noticed feeder cattle, live cattle kind of came back towards unchanged. So maybe a little bit of a silver lining to a market that's just been struggling as of late, Brian.
Yeah, the cattle market's been struggling, the cash, the futures, and that, but not the you know, the other side of the packer. And so those things have a tendency to straighten out as well. I think from a big picture perspective, if we think back 3 months ago or 6 months ago, we kind of looked at this whole COVID thing. There's general field confidence. Hey, you know, February, March, April, start to see, you know, the COVID numbers go down, get towards summer. Well, that's really what's happening. And there's a lot of pent-up demand, it looks like, for a lot of things. And so one of those is for people to get out and get about, start getting back to some normal routines. And I guess if it's any indicator in the general area that I live in, seeing some of the chain brands as well as privates, man, their restaurants are busy. So and their steaks restaurants. So I think people are back at it. So
I think so as well. And I think we'll start to, you know, gradually see some of that shift. And I know a lot of folks have been pointing at that third, fourth quarter on the beef side, thinking that that might be where we see this cattle market, the future side, at least, and the cash side maybe turn itself around as we get towards the end of the year.
Right on. And that's exactly what we would expect to see too. You know, between, I think, there's three things between the vaccinations, just the idea that this bug may be starting to run its course, and then this whole idea of, you know, people back to spending money. All looks good. All of it looks good for demand for beef, pork, all the products. It just looks good for it.
Definitely. Dairy market, Brian, any updates for us as we start the new week?
As you look at kind of like the, you know, let's look at September milk consolidated after, you know, touching $20, we took off about $2 on that. So about 20, $2 on the front months. As we look to the back months, you look at like December milk, everything's off the high a little bit, but actually holding there pretty good. What you're seeing is probably two things that are starting to develop. One is the high price of corn is probably creating a different mix into the herd. So you're seeing some cows that are probably going and maybe some heifers that are going as well. So we kind of think that the herd size probably leveled off due to the feed side of things and the uncertainty with summer weather. The demand side of things, that's been erratic. But, you know, you look at this, the market had a couple of big run-ups. It's been very erratic, drop off here. Looks to us like it's starting to stabilize now. I've argued that that the high price of milk cures itself and that we produce more. The exception to that is when you have high input costs. And right now, feed's not cheap. So it'll self-regulate itself. Cattle milk market may have some downside to it, but now it's probably limited.
Brian, any other final thoughts you have for us today? I know we covered a lot in a short amount of time. Anything else you want to touch on or reiterate for us today?
Well, just again, to your grain farmers that are hearing this or seeing this, and that is, you know, don't be afraid to take action. Waiting around to get enough news to make a decision, That can be really difficult. We saw July corn. This one sticks in mind. We saw that lose 71 cents in 2 days. December corn rallied, and then it dropped a dollar in a very short period of time. Now it's come back. So these things are moving. They're moving fast. They're moving hard. As you kind of get the planting, spraying, whatever behind you, just take a few minutes and really look at this and have some really critical conversations with those that can kind of throw things at you that make sense for you, and be strategic and not so much trying to guess whether this drought is going to, you know, exasperate itself or just all of a sudden die one day and the whole weather pattern changes.
Well, Brian, I know if producers need a little advice, need some questions answered, they can reach out to you and the team there at Total Farm Marketing. A lot of great ways to reach out, but I know you always, you're a proponent of, you prefer that good old-fashioned phone call, Brian.
I'm kind of old school, right? In a phone call, I can kind of hear things in that call other than just reading words. And so like to hear that, like to hear from people, like to get feedback on conditions and put all that in some realistic context and make sure that we're putting ideas and strategy in front of people that have good value, make sense, regardless of where the market goes. What we did when we look back, those decisions were good decisions.
Definitely. Give Brian a call today, 800-334-9779. That's 800-334-9779. Or you can find all the info online, totalfarmmarketing.com. Brian, appreciate the time as always. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, Jesse. Good to hear from you. Good seeing you.
Yeah, Brian, great to see you as well. Thank you very much. That's Brian Doherty with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin, our guest analyst today here on Market Talk. And we are catching up now with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions talking about weather. We're hearing weather, weather, weather. That's been the storyline here the last week or so in this market trade. And Eric, great to have you on this afternoon. I just want your thoughts on the fact that we're trading a weather market this volatile in June. Normally, this is unheard of. I can't remember the last time that this happened, Eric.
Yeah, usually this all gets going in July, right? I mean, we start waiting for pollination, then start to see how everything's kind of coming out. But this has been one of those years where I think that the setup has got folks concerned. So in other words, people like me have been saying, you know, since winter that, hey, if there's this cold water off the West Coast, which we haven't seen in almost a decade, it just gets us thinking about what that could mean towards summer drought. Then you look, in fact, I just made some maps here. I was going to put them in my reports. I compared last year's May volumetric soil moisture at the end of May, how much moisture is in the soil. And I compared it to what we have right now at the beginning of June in 2021 for the Western Corn Belt. It's substantially lower. So what's got folks thinking here is that if rains don't materialize, we don't have enough in reserve to bring things back up. So every model run that comes out, you know, everyone's like, well, let's see what it did. What did it change? And what does it mean? And then here's the other problem. Predictive skill in summer goes down because these models, even though they're run on the fastest computers on the face of the earth, still can't handle convection. They're not designed to, so they don't get thunderstorms. We can't predict thunderstorms weeks in advance, let alone a few days in advance. And so what it all kind of hinges on here is these model to model run differences. And as the differences come out, whether they're right or wrong, they're getting traded. And so, yeah, it's, we're going to be in this for 6 weeks, man. I don't think it's going anywhere.
I don't think it's going anywhere either. And I one other thing that it seems like it's not going anywhere, at least in the short term, is this drought in the northwestern plains, the northwestern corn belt. Walk us through the setup we're seeing now with the latest model runs, because a lot of folks have been keying on, you know, the 100 degree temperatures in the Dakotas and just everything, kind of that heat in that, you know, northwestern third of the Corn Belt. Walk us through the setup right now and why we're seeing this.
Yeah, so the bad part is that 100 degree heat, which the setup is just a big ridge in the jet stream showed up. And the ridges are only there because it's hot. That's why they exist. So the problem has been that even some moisture that did return, in fact, there were some good thunderstorms at the beginning of last weekend. When you crank the temperatures up like this and you get windy, you know, you could get rid of that inch of rain you just put in the top few inches in a day. And that's the unfortunate part that I don't like, because there's no subsoil moisture to replenish what's being sucked out at the top. And it's not just the next few days that we're looking at the heat continuing. They're going to have, you know, this midsummer like heat for a while. There could be a couple of short breaks in it through the middle of the month of June. But most of the long range models suggest that we're just going to park a ridge somewhere around the 100th meridian. So Texas to North Dakota, that's kind of where I'm talking about. And if it's there, things go around it. So the Canadian Prairie is going to be stormy. The Southeast is going to be stormy. And the West Coast, these folks couldn't be happier for me to tell them that they got at least 5 or 6 days of cooler than normal weather. In fact, this is crazy. In Oregon, where a week ago they were having temperatures that were in the triple digit, there was a freeze warning this morning in Central Oregon. I mean, it's just, what kind of a ride are we on here? Well, it's not one I typically talk a lot about at this point in June. And yeah, so every model run comes out and there's a battle right now. The GFS model, that's a model we run in the United States, it keeps wanting to put down more precip middle of this week, toward the end of this week in North Dakota and South Dakota. And the European is just not having any of it. Now, statistically, you'd say, well, I'm going to favor the European because I can look at the data right now and it tells me the European's got about a 6% margin higher on its skill score. So you'd want to trust the model that's been doing the best. But when it comes to storms, those skill scores kind of get tossed out the window. We got to watch for trends. And the GFS has stayed on the rain and the Europeans stayed off of the rain. And so I sit back and I'm like, the scientist in me says, oh, let's just watch this play out. This will be kind of fun. But everybody wants me to give them an answer to it. And what I'll say is the Gulf is open. There's moisture there. You've got to have a trigger to make those storms. And if there's nothing to fire that air up into the atmosphere, then it's going to stay there. The water's not going to come back out. And I think we're going to watch over the next about 60 hours to see if we can crack through that and deliver some moisture. And then here's the other question. Does it get to the Red River Valley of the North? Because if it stays in the Western Dakotas, that's a much different scenario than if it gets to the eastern side of the Dakotas. I think that's what we're going to watch all week long.
Yeah. And to your point, you know, we get into that summer season with thunderstorms and you're right. We can't necessarily predict them too far out. And it just takes a lot of those ingredients coming together at the right time to produce those thunderstorms. And to your point as well, I mean, we might see some scattered thunderstorms, but that's just it. They're going to be scattered. We're not talking any widespread major events in the latest forecast, Eric.
Yeah, and the problem with ridges in the jet stream is the low pressure systems go around them. If you want to get everybody rain, you got to have a big low that comes through and just wraps up all that moisture. And this is a situation where a low is going to try to form in like Wyoming, and it's going to run into the ridge and fizzle out. And that's the difference. The GFS has it fizzling out later. It kind of pushes it farther, and the GFS just pulls the plug early. Or the European pulls the plug early.
Yeah. I'd like to get your thoughts. So let's shift the conversation a little farther to the south and west from the Dakotas, because a lot of folks are starting to maybe consider Iowa as possibly a quote unquote swing state. Like we're talking politics here. We're starting to watch it get drier in parts of northwest Iowa into north central Iowa. I was just there Memorial Day weekend. It's dry in north central Iowa, maybe more so than people are letting on. Talk about what you're seeing as we kind of move farther, you know, east in the Corn Belt there, Iowa, eastern Nebraska, southern Minnesota. You start talking about dryness there. And I know we also had some frost concerns across that area and to the north of there. So talk about what we're seeing shaping up for that part of the Corn Belt right now.
Yeah, you know, that frost is something else. That was the end of May. And then a week later, they were almost 80 degrees warmer. You know, what a swing in temperatures. And by the way, something to think about here, I was talking to one of our agronomists. In certain stages of growth for the corn crop, when there's big swings in temperatures, they can often get what they call short husking, where later on as the corn develops, it doesn't cover the tip. And you can get, of course, almost like a tip back type look on it. So that could be a consequence to look out for later. But if we come back to your original question, you know, over the next 7 to 10 days, that stretch you just talked about. So let's go, we even go down to Kansas, eastern Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, and that is some prime ground, right? They're in deficit. The next 10 days, they're going to be dry and the temperatures are up. And it's just not, nobody wants to hear that. But I got a phone call last week from a guy. Now, this is in northeastern Iowa. He says, hey, we had some great rains recently. And he says, I went out there and looked at the crop. The crop looks amazing. He said, but our problem here in northeastern Iowa is you go out and toss a spade in the ground and there's nothing to support underneath it. And he goes, if we don't continue to get this, then we don't have the profile to support any sort of a flash drought scenario. And I think that's going to be the case moving forward.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're going to have to be watching there. And it just seems like, to me, from what I'm seeing and hearing, is that kind of cutoff line. You mentioned it, but almost seems like the Mississippi River to the west is where we're talking dry. You go east of there. I know folks in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, the Ohio River Valley, Tennessee, Kentucky, we've had rain in this part of the U.S., and the story is different east of the Mississippi right now.
It is. And I'm a case in point. So I'm over in East Central Illinois in Champaign. I'm kind of looking out my window right now. We got 0.2 inch of rain this morning and things were okay. In fact, over the weekend, did a little yard work and went out and checked and we planted some hostas and I dug down there to look and I'm talking about my backyard, but that's a good a case in point. Now, earlier the year, parts of the Eastern Corn Belt have been very dry and lower Michigan is still very dry in their subsoil moisture, but they're getting the rain right now. Big slow moving lows going through there and it's just missing everything west of the Mississippi River. And by the way, that forecast keeps getting echoed again and again in the long range forecast, which were just released this past weekend. And they just want to keep the west dry and the eastern part of the Corn Belt a bit wetter. And we got to just throw up the big question marks. Is that going to continue to be the case? And at this point, that's a pretty strong trend in the models that we can't ignore.
Very strong trend. And we couple that with the ongoing issues in South America and Brazil. You know, we're watching that USDA report here Thursday of this week. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks are pointing to USDA cutting Brazil production for that safrinha corn crop. And I know the last bits we've been hearing out of Brazil is that, I mean, it's shrinking by the day, and that's been the case for the last month. And you parlay that with U.S. weather concerns and the fact that we need to produce a bumper crop here. It really seems like weather is really starting to shape up to produce us some fireworks here as we move forward into the summer months.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing about that safrinha crop is even though there's some rain in the forecast right now, you know, it's funny. You look down there and it looks wetter than average. Yet all they're expecting over the next 10 days is 0.2 inch of rain. The monsoon normally shuts down this time of year. And, you know, the USDA's next report, you know, the thought would be, why wouldn't they follow suit of everybody else who has reduced theirs over the last few weeks in terms of that total crop production? Will they come down below 100 million metric ton, I think, is the big question. And so if they do, then I think it just puts more pressure on the size and shape of this crop in the United States. And we've already spent the front half of this talking about the weather concerns we have here.
Yeah, there's a lot of things shaping up. As you continue to look at the models here, I mean, I guess it's like we say, it's hard to predict, but you know, we're talking this heat and dryness in the U.S. here in the Western Corn Belt. I mean, is there anything out there that we can maybe, you know, take as good news or in the forecast?
So the good news is the Bermuda high is staying over Bermuda. We would hate to see that thing move all the way inland and set up over like Nashville. That would shut down a lot of us. Instead, it's staying out there, which means we're not going to have any trouble keeping the Gulf of Mexico open. The trouble is, can we get storms to fire on that moisture? And if that's the summer pattern we're going to be in, that's what we're going to have to watch. But I keep coming back to this thing I was thinking about last week. You know, I was talking to one of my colleagues, Andrew Pritchard. He's also a meteorologist. And I said, Andrew, if you gave me this ocean temperature map that we have right now, and you said, this is all I'm going to give you forecast the summer, I'd be like, well, that is an ocean temperature pattern, which I know is historically correlated to Midwest drought issues. It doesn't mean it's a slam dunk, but I would just tell you, if it's so cold off the coast, what we end up getting is the jet stream dips off the West Coast, not over the Rockies. If it dips over the Rockies, we're all in business. It's going to be bumper crop for everybody, but it's dipping off the West Coast. And as a result, we tend to have, well, just a bit more stagnant flow over the Midwest, and then regional drought starts to develop. You add that to the thing we talked about earlier, which is that we don't have a full profile of moisture for everybody because winter was very unkind to the Western Corn Belt in terms of returning that moisture. So we're set up for greater risk of drought issues as we go forward.
Well, Eric, great insight into the weather situation right now. And I should let you give a plug as well. You got a great newsletter comes out each morning for Nutrient Ag Solutions on the weather. Tell people how they can check that out.
Yeah, and it's completely free. And I think what I'll do is I'll toss you over the link so that anybody that wants to get signed up for it can. But it's just 5 days a week. I just kind of put together some bullet points and some maps and say, hey, take a look at this. This is the national picture going on right now. And Nutrien foots the bill. And it's just a great way to kind of keep folks ahead of the game when it comes to the weather. And the cool thing about it is they let me just keep building more and more stuff onto it. So we'll make sure and get that link out there posted so that folks want to sign up, they can.
Yeah, we'll get that posted up on the website, markettalkag.com, also on our social media as well. Eric, appreciate the time. Thanks for the weather update, and I'm sure we'll be chatting with you again very soon. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And again, that's Eric Snodgrass with Nutrien Ag Solutions looking at the weather here on Market Talk for this Monday, June 7th. That's going to do it for the show today, brought to you by GrowMark FS. Learn more online. Go to fssystem.com for the latest on FS, because they're bringing you what's next. That's going to do it for Market Talk for this Monday, June 7th. Find us online, markettalkag.com. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a great afternoon.